G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
I'm looking forward to seeing what Adam White's got for us this morning. He's looking more and more like his father every day with his hair cut. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning.
You're looking more and more like your father. My goodness. My goodness.
You know what? I had my hair cut yesterday.
I can see that.
And she said, the lady, Cindy was her name.
Cindy!
She said at the end of the haircut, as often is the case, are you happy with this? Yeah? Looks okay?
Yeah.
Now, what do you say in that situation?
Well, I imagine if you've got to that point and you're unhappy, then you should have made noise earlier.
Well, that's right. It's too late, isn't it?
Yeah, I think by that stage, it looks fantastic because it's got to.
That's right. You're hardly going to say, well, to be honest, that's bloody awful. Can you start again? Because once the hair's off, you can't stick it back on.
No, I've found that a challenge in recent years.
So in that situation, I tend to analyse my own performance. Did I give her enough instructions? Was I clear in my instructions? Was I lazy? Or did I just sit down and say, yeah, just do whatever?
You used it as a rest interval. That's what you do. You just sat there. You just sat there. Are you unhappy?
Oh, I'm very unhappy. I got home from Emma and I said, I think I've had the worst haircut I've ever had. She goes, oh, it doesn't look that bad. And I said, no, it actually does. It's a disgrace. And I just let it unfold. I didn't, you know, if you know it's, because with the hair, I mean, obviously you used to have hair, but when...
I did, and I wouldn't, you know what, this doesn't happen to me anymore. I don't get this grief anymore.
No. Sometimes in a haircut situation, you don't know that it's going badly early because it's all over the place, you know, they're doing stuff, they've got their water sprayer and they, you know, and things come together all at the end.
Yep, yeah, that's true, yeah.
Well, it didn't come together at the end. I thought, what is this? Anyway.
Well, I think you look handsome.
No, I don't.
You know, the good news about haircuts.
It grows back.
You're only ever 2 weeks away from it being fantastic again. That's the rule of thumb. You're only ever 2 weeks away from looking great.
Yeah.
That's my theory. That's my theory. Who's the most famous Cindy you know, just by the way?
Lauper.
Yeah, good. Nice work. Yeah.
There's not too many Cindys around.
No, there's not. Well, this is my question.
I reckon there's a lot of Cindys that would be hairdressers. It's just a name that you'd associate with a hairdresser, I reckon.
Yeah, Cindy Crawford's up there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Of both the legitimate Cindy Crawford and Shane Crawford.
Yeah. Anyway, I was really hoping you wouldn't mention that this morning because it was sort of, I was quite self-conscious getting up this morning because I'd sort of forgotten about it and then I thought, oh God, look at that. Maybe it'll look better once you've sort of brushed it and all that sort of thing. No.
Sorry to bring it up. But it's, I think I've seen your father wear a similar coloured shirt and I thought it was him co-hosting today. Well, when you sat down.
Anyway, I've found some.
Your father's a very handsome man too, just by the way. We shouldn't understate that.
I found some clothes and now I've moved back home that I haven't worn for a while. And this is one of these brick numbers that I'm wearing.
Cindy from the Brady Bunch too, coming off the SMS too. Yeah, that's the other one I had in my mind, I must admit.
Question is, I hope Cindy isn't listening. I can guarantee you that Cindy won't be listening to RSN.
Are you sure?
No, I'm absolutely positive.
Sort of demographic, Cindy. What would she be listening to?
That's a really good question. I don't know. Don't encourage me. I'm not going down that line. I'm not sure. But I don't think she's interested in RSN 927. Anyway.
You'd be surprised. There's a lot of people jumping on board the Breakfast Club.
Yes.
Setting up their days.
Very much so.
6 to 8:30 weekdays.
Let's hope we've still got some sport to talk about in the next couple of weeks.
Are you concerned that with the world, the sport's not going to shut down, is it?
No, I don't know. I don't think anyone really knows. I mean, no one would have expected a month ago for us to be in the situation we're in at the moment. No, here in Victoria. I think everyone felt that things were smooth sailing. We were talking about the fact that there was going to be possibly 25,000 people at the football to watch Essendon and Collingwood play on a Friday night. Well, that clearly didn't happen. So things have dramatically changed here in Victoria, and who's to say that another outbreak might take place in another city, and all of a sudden it unravels everything. So I don't think anyone can. I said this a couple of weeks ago. I don't think it's necessarily. This might sound stupid, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing what's happened, because it's proven to everybody not to get complacent, and it's proven everybody that it's not just going to go away. That perhaps people have got to change their lives forever in the way that they go about life if we want to get back to some semblance of normalcy. But I don't know what to think about it. But you know, just see this rush into New South Wales now, whether it's the supercars or whether it's AFL players, A-League players, etc. That's fantastic, and hopefully we can keep playing. But what happens if it gets into Sydney again? I don't know.
No, we don't want that. We don't want that. Do we see, just on the supercars, there was, as you say, a rush yesterday to get them out following ongoing discussions with New South Wales and Victorian health authorities. All Victorian team personnel and drivers will relocate to Sydney Motorsport Park ahead of next weekend's Truck Assist Sydney Super Sprint. The team garages at Sydney Motorsport Park will be open for use from this evening, which was last night. Supercar CEO Sean Seamer said Supercars has been closely monitoring the situation. Victorian teams have been preparing to bring forward travel dates in advance of today's announcement. We appreciate their willingness to play their part to ensure we protect the health and well-being of supercars and the wider community. We remain agile and continue to work with all government stakeholders, relevant medical office officials and teams on ensuring we race in a safe and compliant way. So they got a bit of a jump on things. Once the word had got around, sort of Tom Billinson, Man from Snow River style, so they rallied the troops and got going pretty quickly. We know the AFL, you would think, had some information on Sunday night, or Saturday night even, about the possibilities of a broader shutdown from New South Wales, so that they brought forward teams leaving from the AFL perspective by 12 hours or 24 hours in some aspects. So there must have been, and this is great for sport in our wheelhouse. Obviously, some people think it should have been conveyed to the general public a bit earlier if it's going to be considered. Great for the sports that they must have had some communications with governments to know that this might be coming, so to get your house in order really quickly so this can continue, all this stuff can continue.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said before, I mean, no one really knows what's going to happen around Australia, certainly even here in Melbourne. We saw the cases move up to 127 yesterday. And I think everyone, when you see that number, you go, oh, gosh, that's not good. But then when you actually dig into the figures and you realise of where most of them are, you can understand why they shut down the towers the way they did, and B, you know, it is in certain pockets, and hopefully with what they're doing at the moment, they're going to be able to get on top of it quickly and learn from what happened last time. And we know that they can get on top of it because they've already done it once, and now with what they've learnt from last time, you'd like to think that they can do it again. But yeah, interesting times. But it's great to see. I think it's the word that's being used a lot at the moment: agile. But sports are doing that, and also the sacrifices that the athletes are making to keep the sport going, because you know they get paid to play, they get paid to compete. We understand that, but we also understand the amount of money involved in these sports to keep them going. So the players, the coaches, the administrators are doing a terrific job to keep the sport going, to keep the money in the game, and all, you know, that's really the reality is that's really important.
Absolutely, my word it is. Scotty McLaughlin, our man, the two-time defending supercar champion, just tweeted, in fact, don't ever question the commitment of some drivers, crew members and families have for our sport. What the Victorian teams have sacrificed allows the sport we love to continue to provide entertainment for us all and a job for the majority of the people in supercars. Thank you, says Scotty.
I'm really looking forward to catching up with Charlie Cameron later on. I made a comment a couple of weeks ago that there aren't too many players in the competition where you can watch as a neutral observer, where you're going to be entertained by watching him play. So if you turn on the television, turn on a match, you know, you're not invested emotionally. Are there the players in the competition that just make you want to watch them play? Charlie Cameron is one of those players. He is not only now, I think he's gone from being one of the more exciting players in the competition, Daniel, to actually one of the more destructive and one of the best players in the competition.
Yep.
And I would never have thought that a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's definitely been a shift that he was an enigmatic player, certainly when he was at the Adelaide Football Club. In the last couple of years, he's certainly developed and evolved as a player, more complete player, which happens with maturity and time in the system too, I think. But he's got an enormous amount of talent, no doubt about that, but destructive is the word that you use, which I think is... It's a nice label to have if you're an AFL player, being a destructive player, because there's not too many that carry that moniker with them through their careers.
And in smaller or shortened games, someone that has the capacity to kick two or three goals in 5 minutes can actually win you a game. And he has that capability. I know we're going to speak to Oscar very shortly, but two things I wanted to mention. Bryson DeChambeau. Now, I know we've talked about him a lot in recent weeks on this program.
What have you done with Bryson?
Well, you've got to give him credit. Now, people want to criticise him for his crazy ways, the nutty professor and all these sorts of things, and putting on all this weight and the amount of time he takes to play each shot, etc.
Which is unacceptable.
It is unacceptable. But he's a man, a little bit like Patrick Reed, who is under enormous pressure where you actually see fellow professionals openly criticise him. It doesn't happen very often in sport. Particularly in the gentleman's game of golf.
Yep.
But for him to do what he's done, he's putting a real target on his own back to then back that up and actually, you know, contend over the last month or so and now have a win. That's a pretty impressive effort from him, I reckon.
Yep. Yeah, well, he's come back bigger and better than ever, literally, in just about every aspect.
Yes.
As Bryson. And you're right, there's not many players in the game of golf that have had that target on them. And I mean, Tiger had it because he was so awesome and everyone just kept coming for him. But he also had that intimidation factor where if they got close, they almost stood back during the tournament. Whereas there'd be a lot of people just wanting him to fail. I'm not sure anyone ever wanted Tiger to fail.
No,
they just wanted
correct.
To beat him.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's people out there on tour that want him to fail because they see him as this... really outside the box sort of player and annoying and does all this stuff that gets up people's noses. So
yes. Yeah.
I reckon there's a difference, but he's not Tiger level, but he's good for golf because he creates conversation.
Yeah,
we
I agree.
Talked yesterday about the incident in the bunker where he assaulted the sand and that was picked up by the cameras and he asked that not to be broadcast because it's not good for the image of the game. It's conversation for golf. Golf's been a very stale sport for years and years and years. It needs something to carry on the conversation through the weeks.
There's no doubt about that, and I think, and I don't know whether it's because of social media or why it is, but we don't want everyone to be the same. We don't want this cookie cutter type athlete that comes out and everyone loves him and he says the right thing and everyone has the same opinion. Everyone plays the same way. I think it's fantastic that Bryson is different now. It's a different conversation around whether technology is ruining golf, because I think in a lot of ways it is.
Yep.
But he's only playing within the rules, and he's decided, well, you know what, I'm going to put on 15 kilos, I'm going to get into the gym, and I'm going to hit the ball further than anybody else. Now, he's gone around this golf course over the last 4 days, and his average drive was 345 yards. So it's become pretty much a pitch and putt course for him outside his driving, and he's found a way to win doing it that way, which he wouldn't have been able to do 12 months ago or 24 months ago. I think that should be celebrated because he's found a way, and that's a good thing.
Well, what he doesn't know is that he's actually taken a leaf out of our book. You and I have put on 15Ks to KDs to improve our golf game. It hasn't quite worked to the level of Bryson.
That's right. and this is the whole
But it's
thing.
Coming.
As you know, Colin Montgomery had that famous situation where he lost a lot of weight because he thought it would be good for his health and his physique, and he lost his swing. And that's clearly my biggest fear and what's holding me back from losing probably more than 15 kilos is how will it affect my swing.
Now, something that goes a bit faster than a yellow submarine is an F3 car. And on the weekend, was the first round in Austria, and one of our own, just a boy from just down the road, Whitey, from Brighton, Oscar Piastri, took out the race in Austria, the first race of the season, the F3. It's his first race in the category after jumping up a couple to have his first crack at it. And he's been good enough to join us on the line this morning on The Breakfast Club. Oscar, good morning.
Morning, guys, or evening from here, but yeah, thanks for having me.
It is great to have you on board. Now, you're currently still in Austria because there's another round coming up this week, isn't there?
Yeah. So we've got another round in Austria this weekend, and then we're off to Hungary the following weekend.
Right. Now, tell us, what was the weekend like for you? We'll get the backstory and how it's all come to this point, but what was the weekend like for you and to have that moment where you crossed the line first and you're on debut in the F3 category?
So first, it was great to get back racing. Obviously, everyone's been waiting for a really long time, so it was great to get back in the car. And, I couldn't have really started off much better than I did, really. Win on debut was a dream start, and it was definitely cool to get the first win of the year, and especially after such a long break and all the anticipation. So, great start.
Do you go in with any confidence at all into that moment? We spoke to Scotty McLaughlin a couple of weeks ago, who's getting back into the supercars, and they weren't allowed back in the cars. He hadn't had any time in the cars after such a long layoff and didn't really know how it was going to go. It turned out pretty well for Scotty because he's an excellent driver. Did you have any confidence level going in with a new category, new team, and the first race for so long?
I was reasonably confident. Obviously, the team I'm with, Prema, are exceptional. They won the championship last year, so I know I'm in a good spot with them. Obviously, 4 months off, a little bit of doubt can creep in, but, it's the same for everyone. After the first practice session where I finished second, that was definitely a major confidence boost. So I went in with reasonable expectations, obviously, first race in the championship as well, so I was keeping my expectations open and a little bit probably lower than last year. But, obviously there wasn't much need for that in the end.
No, absolutely not. Now, Oscar, I want to go all the way back. What got you, and you are only 19 years of age, but what got you into motor racing?
It was mainly my dad. So my dad's company is a car tuning company. His passion for motorsport really is kind of what got me into it. We raced remote control cars. I started when I was about six. So that was before I started karting. We met somebody through remote control cars who had a go-kart and gave it a go one day. And the next week I had my own go-kart. So that's how it all started.
So is it an easy thing to get into, or do you need to know someone when you're starting off to get into that sort of, on that journey?
I think if you're going to do it properly, you probably need to know someone in the industry. It's definitely a massive help, but there's plenty of kart shops around. All it takes is a phone call or go to a track and try a kart one day and see how you like it, really.
And when did you know that you were going to be good at it? Because it's one thing to be interested in it. It's another thing to know that you can do it. Was it almost instantaneous that you thought, oh, this is me, I'm good at this? Or did it take a while to find your rhythm in the sport?
To be honest, it happened pretty quickly. I was reasonably quick, sort of, as soon as I jumped in. I think having sort of 3 or 4 years of racing remote control cars, I kind of knew what racing lines were and, had a rough gist of kind of what I was doing. Obviously, it's a bit different to driving a go-kart, but my pace was pretty good from the get-go. Obviously, developing the racecraft took quite a while, so getting the race confidence took a while. Everything comes with time, and it probably took me a good couple of years to cement myself at the front of the races I was doing. So, took a bit of time.
Did you ever race the remote control car at next to the Templestowe footy ground?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I think I raced the Victorian state titles there 1 year, and I've raced there quite a few times.
It's an amazing place where there is just so many people there driving remote control cars. It's an amazing place when everyone's there and competing.
Yeah, it's awesome. I used to love it when I raced them. Obviously, motorsport now, not this year, obviously, with no fans, but the races now got a lot more people there. But that was, back when I was a little kid, that was awesome fun. And that's what got me started in it all, really.
There you go.
And what you're in at the moment? is they go a bit faster than the remote control cars, I imagine. But tell us a bit about the last 5 years for you, Oscar, because you've been living in London and boarding at school in London. You left your family. You've got three sisters, mum and dad, who live in Brighton, and you've been boarding in London. How's that been? So you've gone over there as a 14-year-old, effectively. That wouldn't have been easy.
Yeah, so the first sort of 6 months that I moved to UK, I was with my dad, so I wasn't completely chucked out on my own at 14. But, so I raced karts initially, and then in 2016, and then went into single-seaters. And my dad was at all the races, pretty much. It's only been the last couple of years where he hasn't been able to come to all of them, and obviously this year it's really difficult for him to come, unfortunately. Being a boarding school was a bit of a change compared to school at home. I got used to it pretty quickly, and I still had the regular breaks from school with all the racing I was doing, so it was somewhat normal. And yeah, it's been really good the last 5 years. I've actually just finished there, so I've now moved out, and I'm living near Oxford with another member of the Renault Sport Academy. So yeah, it's been a fun 5 years, and I think I've definitely found quite a bit of independence from it.
Time for the world-famous seven-question quiz. On the back of that, if you're up and about, give us a call. If you're not, well, you probably just need to inspire yourself and get on the line anyway. 1-300-652-927 is the number to call. It's all thanks to Essendon Premiership star Jason Johnson and his team at Dynamic Foods, giving away a $100 gift voucher to the winner of the quiz. Healthy, nutritious meals, supporting local farmers. All the meals are cooked by our chefs, and they're world-class chefs, just by the way. And the best part is, delivered straight to your door, dynamic.com.au, or give Jace a call on himself. He loves you when you do that. Home number, 8669-0587. Now, there are some rules, of course, for the quiz. Don't tell any stories. Not be sharing any context. We might share a little bit. No jokes to be told. No fumbling, no bumbling. No analysis of how you get to your answer. No telling us where you live and expecting conversation on the back of it, especially if it's in a hot spot. We'll just move on quickly. Don't tell us who you're barrack for. No more umming and ahhing. We've tightened restrictions on the back of Dan's efforts at Premier level. No more telling you where the big dog is in the queue. Where is the dog? We don't care what your favourite topic is. If you can call in, you must call in. All postcodes are welcome. We're an inclusive program here on The Breakfast Club. You may tell Whitey's asked a question. He likes that. I will give you a hint when required. And pay attention when I do, because they're pretty bloody good and pretty easy once I do, often. Only questions, only answers. Whitey's world famous seven-question quiz.
It's a great quiz this morning. A really interesting quiz. Some context needs to be given to a few of these questions, but no, I think it's really
you've heard me say the rules.
Yeah, I know.
Context allowed.
But I really like this quiz this morning. It's a very interesting one. Ross,
it is so infectious.
It is. It is. The quiz is. I agree with you, Dan. Dan's having a bad time, isn't he?
We had a birthday yesterday. Happy birthday to Dan. Hope you had a nice night last night.
Get on the beers.
Well, that's what I would have done if I was you, Prince of Premier.
There's a few in the towers that might be doing that at the moment. Ross from East Melbourne,
haven't
good
got
morning.
Access to the beers.
Yeah, good morning, Whitey. Morning,
Harv. Morning, Roscoe.
Now, we've got Test cricket back this week, which is absolutely sensational in the UK with the West Indies taking on England. Who will captain England in the Test match?
Ben Stokes.
Very good. That is amazing. Sweet. That Ben Stokes, you think of where he's come from in the last 24 months.
Yep.
That he's going to captain his country.
Yep. It's context.
Obviously not as interested as I am in that one.
Well, I just know the rules.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk about that more tomorrow then. Who was the former Carlton 1987 Premiership star and South Australian champion, really, who tragically lost his life to brain cancer yesterday, Ross?
Mark Naley.
Very good.
McGeary Medal in 91, Premiership player with the Blues, fantastic player. Very sad news yesterday.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm happy for context there.
That's okay.
Are you good with your racing, Ross?
No, I'm not the biggest racing man in the world, but give me a crack.
All right. Can you name the Australian jockey who is about to win a fourth Hong Kong Premiership?
Oh, yes. Good quiz.
I only know one jockey that, and obviously that rides in Hong Kong, Brett Preble, probably not him.
No, not him. So you got that right. It wasn't him, but I can't give you that as the answer.
Who's our racing question man?
From Preston.
Demands racing questions.
Yeah, he does. Steve on the road, good morning. You there, Steve? No, he's not. He's gone. We'll go to Paul from Frankston. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. I was hoping for not a racing question. Zach Purton.
Oh, very good, Paul.
Really?
Excellent. Brilliant. Excellent. Now, actually, this is unheard of here. The quiz answer is actually on Michael Falgate's show this morning. Zach Purton.
Well, that's the second time it's happened through the quiz, because we got somebody else on the back of the quiz, didn't we? One of your questions.
Stokes on.
Scotty Draper.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep, that's right. Okay, next one. Oh, this is a good question. Which AFL footballer, Paul, has missed the last 2 weeks after injuring his foot cooking fish at home?
Oh, what disaster.
What team?
He's from Hawthorn.
He is. This year, anyway. Not so much last year, where he's up north a bit.
Paul Pioff.
Great Paul name. Pioff. Great name. Well done.
Paul Pioff.
Well done.
Cameron from Richmond. Good morning, Cameron.
G'day, Adam. Is it John Patton?
Very good. Very good.
Just came in and went whooshka. Did
very
Cam.
Good.
He's not messing around.
He spilt some oil on his hot oil on his foot.
Cooking
and I don't
salmon.
Even think Alice. Would you cook salmon?
My word.
Out all of us. Everyone. Following the simplest of rules.
Okay.
It's true.
He's getting
apologies
now. Sorry.
Salmon's delicious.
Okay. Question number five. Between 1985 and 1991, a German tennis player won Wimbledon four times. Now, three of those times, the German player was Boris Becker. But who was the other German champion?
Oh, yes. Good question.
We should be having Wimbledon this week.
Okay.
Second week of Wimbledon, should be.
They've been paid out. They're okay.
Yeah. Michael Stick.
Very good Cameron. Well done. Very good.
Good.
I really hope you go the whole way from here, because that was a good answer. Now, this one, you either know it or you don't, okay? I find it a fascinating story that probably
this
should
This is
get...
not over. And I know many Victorians, perhaps all Victorians, want this to be over.
No, this is a good quiz, Dan. I'm sorry.
I love that.
All right. Which Sri Lankan cricket star was arrested on Sunday after allegedly being involved in a car crash with a cyclist where the cyclist died? Now, this happened in Sri Lanka. He's an absolute star of the game, and he's been arrested.
Current player?
Current player. Made a test 100 this year.
I'm not even sure how to give you a clue. They're not common names. I don't even know how to give you a clue. I'm sorry.
Mendes?
Yes! Yeah, we're going to give it to you. We're going to give it to you. We'll quickly jump in and give that. Kusel Mendes. So there's two Kusels that play really well, Mendes and Pereira. And Mendes, that hasn't got a lot of attention.
No.
He's driving a white Range Rover.
Sounds like context
at
to me.
At 5 o'clock in the morning.
Why would you want to go there?
Because it's serious, Dan. All right, now what we're going to do here, Cameron, is if you get this, we are going to put in a bottle of Ponting wine and an Anamir's book to go with your $100 dynamic voucher.
The Ricky Ponting wines?
Yep. We're very impressed with how you're playing today. Who am I? I was a superstar of my sport, absolute superstar of world sport, really. Particularly here in Australia, after winning two gold medals at the World Championships in 1994 and a further three gold medals at the World Championships in 1995. But her 1996 Olympic campaign was thrown into controversy after she failed a drug test because she was given a headache tablet by her coach, Scott Volkers. Who am I?
Wasn't Sam Riley.
Oh, Cameron! Brilliant! Absolutely brilliant!
A very strong performance.
Are you a NAB Rising star? Is this the first appearance?
The cricket one. Yeah, it is, sorry.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he's on debut. It's a strong knock early and not out. A fantastic performance by Cam. He walks away not only with the $100 dynamic voucher, but the Ponting wine and the Anamir's book. And...
he comes back tomorrow.
We'll get him back on tomorrow. Always great to have a Rocket Eater part of the team on the Breakfast Club. He's back on a Tuesday after round five action. Rocket, good morning.
Morning, Daniel. Good to talk to you again, mate. And Whitey, how are you?
Good to have you back. It's good to
be back.
Absolutely.
We missed you last week, Rocket. We missed you.
Where were you? A sabbatical, were you?
We had just a little bit of week off, just a time away. It's important sometimes to just see other people, Rocket.
Yeah, I understand that, mate. I understand.
And those other people being my family at some stage.
And then you see those people too much, so you have to go back to work.
Well, you have to go on holiday by yourself.
If you can nail that, that's a great system. You can nail that sort of stuff, Rocket. Now, tell me, what have you made of, just because we didn't have the conversation with you last week, what have you made of footy in 2020 so far with the disjointed nature of it? How have you seen footy, Rocket?
Look, it's obviously different for the players, but it's certainly different for supporters, and media people are supporters. The non-crowds has been difficult to get to. I think probably got to cut the players a little bit of slack because of the lack of training. And you see some teams and certainly some individuals have been affected by that with fumbling and the skills and still going on. Some teams are improved on the weekend, which was good to see. I thought the football at the weekend generally is a little bit better than it's been the previous couple of weeks. But it is getting used to. I know a lot of supporters are frustrated by it at the moment. I think it's more because it's so different to last or previous seasons with no crowds and no hubs and that's the main sort of talk, isn't it? But I think the AFL are doing a good job to keep it going at the moment. But I hope it still keeps going. That's going to be the issue going forward.
I think it's a good point that the footy was definitely better on the weekend. It was sort of 3 weeks into the restart or 4 weeks into the restart. It did feel at times that there was better footy played. We've spoken a lot about Melbourne Rocket over the last couple of years with you on this program. I asked this of Jimmy yesterday. Is the criticism over the top of Melbourne, or is it fair enough for them to be copying the Heat again so early in the new season?
Oh, I think it's fair, to be honest. You can cope with losses. I know they're a game short at the moment, so they've got another game to play, but the way they're playing, they wouldn't win that. So, they don't seem to have a system, do they? It just seems to... Now, the number of inside 50s, and they're the worst scoring team with a number as a percentage going inside. And the number of mistakes they're making, and I mentioned before, you cut teams a little bit of a slack. I think their effort is nearly just about there, you'd say, or it's there. Now, they're trying hard. They really tried hard on the weekend, but just their decision-making and skill errors were abysmal, to be honest. They need to be better than that. Now, they're second last in the competition at the moment, Adam, so they deserve some heat. You can be second, like Fremantle. I know that it's all to do with expectations, and I understand that Melbourne's expectations are higher than Fremantle, so you're always going to be disappointed. But Fremantle, and even without Fife at the weekend and missed a half a game against the Suns, which they may have been able to get up in, they've looked okay, Fremantle. Like, they've been close enough. You'd be disappointed with losses, but you'd say, well, no, they're not far off with Melbourne. Their one game is a one-point win over Carlton, where probably Carlton kicked 4-7 in the last quarter, or 4-5 or whatever it was, and Carlton should have won that. So they'd be zero games. And there's no game really that you can say, well, Melbourne have showed something that you can hang your hat on. And if I was a Melbourne supporter, I'd be really frustrated, probably simmering and percolating towards angry.
So they pushed Geelong. They very nearly beat Geelong, and it would have been a pinch if they got it, but they were competitive with the team that finished in the top four last year, and then at times challenged Richmond. So it's not like they've been horrific, but is it more about what you see from them time and time again frustrates you, that there doesn't seem to be a system or the forward line's not working? So that's where the criticism comes?
Yeah, and I think on the back of last season, which was a frustrating year for everybody, to be honest, after being in the preliminary final, that they've won 5 of the last 26. So it's not a great record. They've won less, it's equal to Gold Coast or less than Gold Coast. So we're a team that's finished in the top four the previous year. Everyone talks about Adelaide, but it's a big fall.
Yeah, it's
Blues
cool.
At the moment. And it's a big fall. And I'm only five games in, so you probably give them another 2 or 3 weeks. But it's you look for patterns and you look for signs, and the signs aren't good at the moment, are they? How they can dig themselves out of this hole. And they need to win the weekend. If they don't win at the weekend, I know you said it was Metricon, but it's in Sydney at Giant Stadium.
Yeah, Giant Stadium, yeah, you're right.
And so, which, I don't know if it's good or bad, but they need to win that. If they don't win that, it looks like a long season for them.
Yeah, they're back-to-back at Giant Stadium this week and next week with the Gold Coast Suns and the Hawks. So they've got some challenges on that. So the one of the conversations around them at the moment, Rocket, is that forward-half connection. How do you coach forward-half connection? Is that purely system-based, or is it repetition, rehearsal-based? How do you coach? How do you improve the situation that they find themselves in at the moment?
Yeah, a lot of coaches, we hear about system-based, don't we? We're a system-based team. We lose five players, but our system will carry us over. Well, we still need good talent. Richmond last year, early in the year when they were losing games, our system would carry forward, but they were without Martin, without Riewoldt, of course they weren't going to win. So have they got enough talent in the forward half is one thing. Is it the way the ball's coming in? So you'd have to look at it more deeply. I think it's a bit of a mixture of system and players about rehearsal, about connection. So in certain, actually coach scenarios, but I think you've got to train it, but at the same time let players be able to make the right decision, give them scenarios, or give them A, B, C and D, but within that you'll be able to pick the right option. I think if you make it too structured, you've got to kick the ball to this spot, you've got to kick the ball this way. It's a lot of information for players to process under the heat at the time. So I think they've got to work together. I think the forwards have got to work together, as in leading patterns. The delivery of the ball, this is our preferred option, is a guy on the lead. If we're going to kick it long, we prefer to keep it lower, if that's the right phrase, and to an advantage side. And if we're in a certain part of the ground, this is where we want to get it. We want to kick on the angle, a bit like Charlie Cameron on the weekend when he hit Hipwood. Dermot talked about the fat side, but it might be the angle kick. Let's take it offline a bit. So there's whichever way the coach or the team feels that they've got to play. But then within the structure, it's not going to be perfect. Because the stats show if you can get a score every 50% of the times you go inside 50, that you're doing okay. That's about the average. So 50% of the time you're not. So, but they're down to 20 or 30%, which is very low. So I think it's a combination of having a system. This is where we prefer to do, train it, but also have that scenarios, actions where players can pick the right option and they've got three or four different options. The players who can't make those decisions shouldn't be playing the midfield.
Yeah.
They've got to either be a tagger or got to be in the back line or whatever the case may be.
So half as a midfielder as you were, such a dominant midfielder.
Powerful.
When you look up and see...
Very good decision maker.
Yeah, that's right. When you see those forwards inside 50 for Melbourne, is that one of the reasons why there's this lack of clarity in going forward because they don't have the confidence in the players that are down there? Or is it more a general game style issue that they've got? Why is it that they are playing the way they are?
I don't think it's a personnel situation where you have, because they're not seen as great forwards that you wouldn't kick it to them. You kick to the person who's in the best position. That's your job. It doesn't really matter who it is. You just kick it to them. Unless you've got Wayne Carey sitting down, then you find a way to kick it to him any day of the week. And they don't have that. So I think it's more a confidence. I think it's a lot of it's confidence at the moment, which is one of the biggest challenges in footy, to be able to make decisions in the heat, as Rocket talks about, when you're not feeling great about yourself and pulling the trigger and just executing your skills. And I think it's a real big mountain for them to climb at the moment. We'll talk to Maxie about it later on, but that's one of my questions for Rocket this morning was going to be, how do you coach this group at the moment, Rocket? 5 out of 26, as you say, they are... And they came in to the season with big expectations. They were talking about the aberration of last year. And now that 2020 was going to be their opportunity. It's been disjointed. They haven't had that continuity like anyone else, admittedly. But this was going to be their redemption year, Rocket, and it's not happening. So they would be feeling as flat as shark poop, really, you'd reckon.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think, back to Adam's question to you, that I mean, sometimes it might be the forwards don't have confidence in the midfielder, so they don't lead.
The other way. Yeah.
So you've actually got stationary targets, and then it creates confusion with the midfield. And it's a subconscious thing. So it's interesting that Melbourne in their good year were free-flowing and took the game on and played instinctive footy, if that's the right phrase. They seem to be disjointed and not playing with confidence. When you're in this situation like at the moment, and some players don't like it, especially some talented players, say, well, you can't coach effort, but they've got to get back just to basic. I know it's a pretty simple saying, but get back to basic. This is what we've got to do. We've got to get the ball in our forward half, keep practising it, but we're going to keep the ball in. We're going to keep the ball in. So we're going to get a look at it. So we're just going to tackle. We're going to get pressure. So we're staying in the contest consistently, get some goals, and then slowly but surely build on our connection. We are not going to go from 0 out of 10 that it is at the moment to an 8 out of 10 that's going to turn the... It doesn't happen, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
They can't flick a switch. It's not... There's very few players and minimal teams that can flick a switch. Your players are trained, and they need to get back and do the hard work and do the connection. Like Clayton Oliver, who's a really good player. Anyone says he's not a great kick... He's a nice long kick, but he's short passing. Now, whether that's decision-making, which you wouldn't think because he uses the ball so well by hand, but he's two turnovers in the middle of the ground, that last one they got the goal from, Richmond, and the one that he hit Baker. Like, he's missed the target by 20 metres. Like, maybe in those situations you coach individuals and say, OK, we will get it in, but we'll kick it off angle. Instead of kicking in a straight line, we'll kick it on angle. So our forwards have got to run to it, even if it's a 5 to 10 metre run. Rather than let's play over, they overpossess. They're turning it over and they overpossess. Let's play territory a bit. Let's play based on effort, and then slowly but surely we'll get our confidence back in by that. And then as coaches, you reward that. So you build their confidence. Say, well done, Daniel. You know, you've had three tackles this week. You've got the ball going forward. You've surged it forward. Richmond's game plan was no fuss in the years that they've won it, and it was just a really getting the ball forward. Didn't overpossess. Let's surge it, soccer it, get it going forward. Had probably had a bit more talent in their forward line, a bit more talent in the midfielders, but by the same token, maybe they've just got to play basic footy and get it. And that's the way you build your confidence, is just by consistency over and over and time again. And then eventually they can broaden their horizons.
Question off the SMS about Harley Benner, why he isn't playing, when we talk about why he was brought to the football club and the good decisions he makes and the skill level that he's got. Are they playing the long game with him? Why wouldn't they be playing him at the moment?
Yeah, because his game he played, and everyone sang his praises, which was, you know, he only played 50% game time and got away with that. That's good. But his ability to use a ball and his decision-making is elite. He's probably obviously down a bit on game time and playing football, but... I can't believe that they would play him, manage his game time, which they did exceptionally well, and then not play him again. Whether it is he's sore in a calf and they don't want to put that public stress on him because of the problems he's had. But yeah, I find it an interesting one that they wouldn't play him and slowly build his game time. It must be something else that's gone on.
Well, he kicked 4 goals and had 25 touches, I think, in their scratch match across the weekend. So I'm tipping.
Oh, okay.
I'm tipping Rocket. I just read that today, funnily enough, that he might be in the mix for the Gold Coast game this week, because it's about ball use and decision making. That's the crux of footy, isn't it? Ball use and decision making. If you can do that, you have a chance to be okay.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone talks about contested ball and pressure, but if you can't use the ball properly. At times, and you can't put it through the sticks, you're not going to be able to score. I know it's pretty simple, but the theme over the weekend, which I thought the football was a bit better, because the football was a bit better over the weekend, even if the skills were down, was you can tell the intent was there to move the ball more quickly. And that's the thing where we like, even though we might turn it over, or the teams turn it over, but we like the intent to try and get the ball inside 50, where the previous week, where there was very little intent. So having that intent to... So if you've got the intent to score, you've got to be able to use it, because it's a turnover game. If you turn it back the other way, you're just going to get slaughtered. And so having Benall there would certainly help them.
I was thinking about this last night. I don't know why. And I was watching one of the footy shows about the ball use and the decision making rocket. Just on that point, have we as an industry and as clubs, have we almost coached skill out of the game a bit? The way that the game is played, because it's now such a territory battle, and it's hack it forward and then press up. Hack it forward and then press up. That's sort of been the method of play for a lot of teams for a lot of years. You haven't needed to necessarily be a great skillful player like you would have come across through the 70s and 80s, and I did through the 90s and the early 2000s, where there were some great skilled players that, under pressure, could find a target 45 metres, left foot, eyes closed, around the body sort of stuff. They were brilliant. But we don't seemingly have that level of skill of the game that we once had as a craft. Did we coast it out a bit with the way we play?
Yeah, I think you may be right. The other thing is, to back your argument up, is a lot of times guys have got a mark or free kick, you know, 70 out, a bit of an angle towards the boundary, and we'll kick it towards, or even 40 out, 50 out, we'll kick it towards the point post and hope for a stoppage, rather than kick it to the front of the square and try and score. So it shows the intent is keep the ball inside 50 rather than let's make it easier for our forwards to be able to score. Or we'll go in and we'll play the boundary consistently because we're mindful of a turnover. So, yeah, we've... Not flair's not the right fruit, but creativity or expansive part of the game is slowly diminishing out of the game. So, and that's why the weekend to me was a bit refreshing. There seemed to be intent to try and score. And that's the whole thing. And obviously Alistair said the previous week about the hole in the man, and it's not the coaches, but the coaches coach that. Coaches coach numbers around the ball, and they coach the way they move the ball. Sometimes players go against that, but generally the chip mark is coach driven. At the weekend there was a bit more intent, I thought, to get the ball inside 50.
I wonder what Charlie Cameron thinks about that. I'm not sure what his contract status is, but I'm sure he'd like a 10-year extension worth $400 million. He's playing just about to that level at the moment for the Brisbane Lions. He's been good enough to join us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Charlie, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, guys.
Good on you, pal. 10 years for $400 million. Would you do it?
Yeah, after the re-signing. That's a huge deal. Wouldn't mind that.
I'll have a chat to Fags and see what I can do for you. Hey, Charlie, you really look like you're enjoying playing footy at the moment. It's nice and it's much easier in a good team, of course, but you look like you're really enjoying playing footy. Is this what's happened since you've been to Brisbane? You've really started to just immerse yourself in life up there, and your footy's a result of all of that?
I think, off the stuff is going pretty well, and then on the field, I think, it just comes naturally. When you have good players around you that make you a lot better, and the coaches that let you go out there and just play on instincts, which is part of my game. And, yeah, I've enjoyed my time up here for the last 3 years.
We were talking about you earlier this morning, knowing you were coming on, and Whitey mentioned the word destructive. And it's one thing to be an enigmatic player and play well every now and then, but you're doing it really consistently now, and you're changing games. How do you define the way you're playing at the moment? How do you see yourself at the moment?
I try to be damaging, but on the weekend I wasn't, because our tall forwards had the best matchups, because their tallest player was 193, which is Cleary. So I just had to get out of the way and let them go to work, and sometimes it's going to be my week, and then it's not. So I've just got to try and play my role, and I'll try to get up the ground and keep the ball inside 50 to the big boys. And yeah, I think when the opportunity comes, when I get a small matchup, I think Jed views this week, so it's going to be a good game.
So, Charlie, you sort of half answered my question. Do you have a bit of a license to do what you want to do, or is it still a very heavily structured and sort of team rules type situation for you inside 50?
Oh, I think, I'll speak to the forward coach, Jed, like you just said, just keep changing your positions to put yourself in a good, like, good opportunity to get involved. And I sort of did that on the weekend where I get up high and play a little bit deeper. If I got a good matchup, I can. But yeah, all that for me is just all that changing up positions to give them different looks, because obviously just don't want to play deep the whole time because it's predictable. So If I can get up the ground and beat him back with my speed, and I don't think anyone can go with me with my speed at the moment. So that's the key thing. But yeah, like I said, I just got to make the most of my opportunities.
We're so excited we're talking to you because I've said this a few times. You are the most exciting player, I think, in the competition to watch. It's just awesome watching you play the way you're playing your footy at the moment. But I'm interested to know, who do you enjoy watching play and who have you sort of emulated your game on sort of growing up, but also now you're a bona fide AFL star? Who are the ones that have inspired you to be the player you are?
Yeah, I've got three players sort of in my position. One of my favourite players, Toby Green.
Yeah, okay.
And Dugowie and Jamie Elliott. I watch them, when they play against the players and coming up the week, I just watch them and see what they do to that player. I just try and take a little bits out of their game and take it in mind. So, yeah, I think those are the three players that I really love watching.
Fantastic. That's really interesting. Really, really interesting. And the player you've become at Brisbane, did you always have the confidence that you could be this sort of player? We saw glimpses of it at Adelaide, but as I said, you've become a genuine star. What changed with you? Was it just genuine sort of natural maturity, or was there a trigger?
Well, I think when I was at Adelaide, I think I was behind a lot of good players and sort of play up the ground and sort of try and be that pressure player. And then I took a lot of out of their games with Tex, Josh, Eddie, Tom Lynch, and then like to take a bit of their game out and then bring it to Brisbane. I guess it helped me mature a little bit more. I think it took me a while at Adelaide, but as soon as I got to Brisbane, I thought here's an opportunity now where I can have the opportunity to play deeper and be a focal point in our forward line. And made the most of my opportunities when it comes. When the matchup come, try and make the most of it, and I've enjoyed it up here. Like I said, I try and take bits out of each player that I come against.
We're heading up today to Manly, where we find the Demons in Hub Life, and the captain of the Demons is a very good friend of the program. Max Gawn is with us. Maxie, good morning.
Good morning, Half. Morning, Whitey, if you're there.
I'm here.
He's there somewhere. Tell us, paint the picture for us. Where are you? What's life like this morning and what can you see from your vantage point at the moment?
What I can see in my hotel room, I didn't get an ocean view room.
What?
Which is just disappointing. I don't know what more I have to do to get an ocean view room, but I haven't got one. So I'm watching a couple of houses in one of the back rooms, but Manly's beautiful. I've got no issues being up here. Woke up this morning, had a little walk on the beach, which is all we're allowed to do, I think. So we're allowed to go for a little walk and then just sit around the hotel and just try and lay low for a couple of weeks.
And how are you feeling, Max? I was interested to see your post-match video on the Melbourne website after the weekend's game against Richmond, and you looked dejected and really disappointed and frustrated and probably fair enough too with the way things are going. How are you feeling at the moment?
I want to win, Half. I understand there's a process and we're playing some pretty good teams at the moment, but I still think we're in really good chances throughout games to win games, and we're almost losing it ourselves at times. And that's the most disappointing part. So, I mean, when I get put a microphone in front of me, 2 or 3 minutes after the game to speak to the club, that was how I was feeling. I was extremely disappointed in the fact that we let Richmond get out to a 35-point lead and we couldn't peg them back. And it was a similar trend. We won a lot of stats, such as inside 50s, clearances, contested possessions, and still not converting. So it's frustrating. But now on a Tuesday, I've well and truly see the process and see that me being frustrated is probably not going to win us a game, but me potentially trying to work out the solution is. So I'm in a much clearer space now. But I think that's a good thing about putting a microphone in front of a player 2 minutes after the game. You get their actual thoughts on before they go read anything, go check their stats. They've literally, they're talking about the 2 hours that just happened. So Yeah, I do like watching post-game interviews as well. You get to see the raw facts.
What was Simon's message, not just after the game, but since the game? Because we've seen you competitive against Geelong and Richmond in the last 2 weeks, which is, I don't think, can be dismissed. But we saw the same things happen that let you down 2 weeks in a row. So what's he saying to you?
Yeah, there is a common trend with our skill execution at times, with all my coaches I've had, it hasn't been something that a lot of coaches really touch on a lot, skill execution. But he has this week. He brought us the raw facts this week and showed us some of the easy shots or the easy chances to hit a forward or just some of the easy kicks around the ground that we're potentially missing. And it's just been cool and calm in heated situations, which Richmond are really good at, and they have been really good at for a while, and they showed us that again. Defences and good defences like Geelong and Richmond that we've played the last 2 weeks, their job is to ruin your ball movement and to make you stressed, and we've probably been that the last two times. So we've fell to two really good defences, and we want to be a team that can beat teams like Richmond and Geelong, and we thought we were in, like, that shows the frustration again. We probably were in the right chance to do that on the weekend.
So what's the mood of the group? Because the club has copped a fair bit of heat from the media in the last couple of days. You are only 1-3 and you've lost to West Coast, Geelong and Richmond. So what's the mood? Is the mood downcast? Is the mood quite positive because you're getting close to Geelong and Richmond? Or explain it. What's the feeling like?
The mood was down. I mean, after the game, we lost the game of football in a game where we were really jacked up before the game and really wanted to perform to a high level. And we tell ourselves that we potentially beat ourselves, but Richmond made us beat ourselves, so Richmond beat us. Just that common trend does get you frustrated. And I had a look at some of the people that potentially turned over the ball on the weekend and had a look at their faces after the game, and they felt the reason. So I know we're going to get a spike out of people putting themselves under pressure at training and making sure we can become a really good kicking side. And but there's other parts of our game that are falling. We let Richmond kick 80 points as well, which is a lot for a shortened game. So there's some other stuff that we've got to work out. But from my point of view, the mood's pretty good. Manly's a great place. I walked the streets yesterday and I didn't get recognised once, which is, it makes you fall in love with Manly. And I don't understand why people from Sydney want to get back to Melbourne. I thought, Tomlinson, like, why aren't you just staying here? This is beautiful. So, I mean, there is some really good things that Manly can bring. And one of them is potentially getting out of the bubble and not listening to the noise and just being like that raw interview that I did post-game half, just being able to deal with what's in front of you and not listen to what other people think about our club. Just think about what we think about our club.
Yeah, and I reckon that's a really important thing for, and you know this better than me, you're living at the moment with your squad, but to be able to just narrow the focus a bit at the moment, Maxie, because things are tough. Things are rough. You've won 5 of 26, as Rocket told us again this morning, and you're a team that 2 years ago nearly played in the grand final. I mean, there's, to go through that roller coaster of outcomes is difficult to deal with, but you can only get better if you're in it together. And I've got a feeling that this is the best possible time for your club to be away. Has that been referenced by the leadership of the club, that this is a great opportunity for us now?
Yeah, we're definitely speaking about it. I'm sure all 10 Melbourne teams, the day they landed in the hub, said we don't want to waste this time in the hub. Like, that's a pretty obvious sentence that most teams would be running with. It's more actions how we actually do that. We're all in the right mindset on the first day of the hub. I mean, everyone wants to perform well for these 5 weeks, but it's going to be challenging at times.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would have been challenging still being in Melbourne as well with what's going on in Melbourne. So we're probably quite lucky that we've been able to escape Victoria and be up here, and be around our teammates that we potentially weren't allowed to be in Melbourne as well. So there's definitely some strengths of being away. And I, for one, that only not only, but I have a wife at home, but no kids, no extended family that I really see during the week. So I, for one, don't have too much that I'm leaving at home. It would have been great to have my wife here, but we understand that can't happen. But So once we buy into this whole team thing and we all live and breathe this fact that we're almost the Manly Demons for five weeks, even though we're sharing a hotel with the Manly Lions as well, and the Coogee Hawks are just down the road, but we can feel like it's ours.
Very good. Yeah, well, I think it's a great opportunity for your club in particular. There's others that probably don't need this, but I would think that considering where you are at the moment as a group and your outcomes, that this is a pretty strong thing. And we were talking before about, with Rocket again, about expectation with teams and how that affects the way we analyse them, Max. And your club, and you've said it before yourself with us in the build-up to this year, that 2020 was going to be a back-on-track year, a bit of a redemption year, and the Road to Hell, or whatever it was called, that documentary series that we all watched, it was a chance for a bit of purging for the D's, and you haven't got the outcomes yet, and I imagine it's enormously frustrating for all involved. How do you overcome that during the week, though, and focus on what needs to happen?
Yeah, as much as I'm trying not to listen to the noise, you do get fed stuff like, e.g., you just telling me what Rocket said. Obviously, although I do love RSN, I do love the show. I didn't tune in at 7 a.m. to listen to Rocket, but I went for a walk on Manly Beach. It was just a little bit more bliss. But so you do hear things filter through. But I mean, reality has us 1-3, but reality also has us losing to the Premier and two other prelim finalists from last year. Yeah, there's a common trend of how we lose games, and even the Carlton game that we won, there was a common trend in that second half that was similar football to what happens when we lose. And reality has us 5 wins from 26 games, and that's you got to face that. You can't hide from reality. And the quicker we embrace the fact that we are 5 from 26 and we do need to start winning games, I think that's what will happen. We'll start winning games, but training is where it starts. This team, this club has really got to put themselves under pressure at training. We have to deal with Richmond and Geelong at training. So when it comes to this unbelievable pressure that Richmond put on the ball carrier, we're able to do it. Yeah. And we can't just hope the other team's off at times with their pressure. It just needs to be a high level of training, which is hard to do in groups of eight. I do agree with some of the comments around that, but it's something we got to get better at, and we want to do it this year. We don't want to wait till next year or the year after and have a drill or whatever it is, bottom out or stuff like that. We want to do it this year. We want to play good footy this year, which means we got to learn how to do it in that group of eight.
Let's touch base with Ty Wesley, who has announced his retirement from the NBL effective immediately. Had a fair impact in this competition, as he did in the New Zealand Basketball League. But Melbourne United star with us, that's where we remember him. He's hung up the big, large shoes, whatever they do in basketball. He still joins us on the line. Ty, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Good on you, buddy. Great to have you on. Now, why now? Why have you decided that now is the time to end your time in the NBL? Championship with New Zealand, championship with Melbourne United. What's happened?
Well, just being in quarantine with my three little kids and my wife, I just felt like with the uncertainty with what's going on in the world, I just felt like it was time for me to focus not on myself and on my dreams, on my, you know, what I wanted to do, but for my family first, and spend some more time with them and be close to our relatives, aunts, uncles, cousins, my parents, my in-laws. So, yeah, we made the decision as a family to be done playing basketball professionally.
So, of course, you were with South East Melbourne Phoenix for the last season, which was great to have you as part of that new franchise in the NBL. Had the world not been as it is, Ty, would you have considered coming back?
100% we would have been back. You know, I was actually signed for two more seasons. But with, you know, it's just a scary world we're living in, and I have three little kids, and my daughter, who we just brought into the world 3 months ago, just had me thinking, you know, why travel and drag them across the world and uproot them? We bought a house here, so, you know, we just felt like it was right.
I'd imagine, Ty, your head's spinning because I mean, 3 months ago, you wouldn't, 4 months ago, you wouldn't have even contemplated this situation.
No, I was recruiting guys to come play with me in Southeast Melbourne. I was, you know, and I had last year, I had an injury-plagued season, which was very, very frustrating. But you know, so I was plotting my revenge on everybody.
So does it sit comfortably, Ty? I mean, it's not just about you not playing in Melbourne, but what you're saying is you're not going to play at all. I mean, is that how does that sit with you?
Well, it's not that great to have to, you know, quit doing the thing that you set out to do since day one, since you were a kid. You know, I remember, you know, being a little kid watching my brothers grow up and play basketball, and one of my brothers played professionally, and all I wanted to do was play basketball every day, all day, and to get paid for it was such a blessing, you know. So it's definitely going to be a hard transition. It's something that, you know, that's been my life for the last 20 years, basketball every single day. So it'll be a hard transition, but I'm excited for what's next.
And the Phoenix, your experiences with them, obviously such a young club, but they got a lot right in their first year. What's your feelings on them and their future?
Oh, man, I can't say enough good things about that basketball club, the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. They've treated myself, my family, so well, from dealing with my injury last year to accommodating my family and the news that I broke to them a couple of days ago. They've been so, so, so good to me and my family, and I'm so grateful for them. The direction they're headed is up, you know, with Tommy Greer and Simon Mitchell and guys like Kyle, Mitch, Gidebo, they're in good hands.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.